What's up, everyone? It's your boy Rob here. Welcome to the Flame Entertainment and Sports. This is a sports edition of the podcast. I hope you guys are all doing great out there. On today's show, I'm going to cover some NFL. As my Miami Dolphins had a bye week, but there are some big games in the league. Denver Broncos pick up another big win. The Cleveland Browns pick up another win. And there's a couple other games that I talk about. Following that, I bring on Paul. We talk about some college football, some games that occurred this past weekend as my Miami Hurricanes fall and his Florida Gators fall. We also cover some coaching news surrounding Harbaugh and Jimbo Fisher, some Heisman talk, and some games coming up for this weekend. Following my college football talk with Paul segment, we move on to some baseball talk as there has been no action, like zero, in MLB free agency for 2023 so far. And I also mentioned, you know, some random coaching news, not much really to talk about since free agency hasn't really come to life yet. And then finally, we end the show covering some NBA talk. I started off talking about my Miami Heat, as we are currently 6-4 with a 5-game winning streak, and our rookie Jaime Jaquez is looking absolutely incredible. And yeah, those are the topics for today's sports episode. Make sure to check out the description of today's show so you can see the timestamps and you know exactly when I'm going to talk about each topic, so you know exactly when you want to tune in to hear about whichever topic is your favorite. And yeah, with all that said, thank you guys again so much for tuning in, and let's get into it. All right, guys, so for the first topic on today's show, as always on these sports episodes, we're going to be starting off with the NFL. But the only difference here, you know, I always start off with by talking about my Miami Dolphins, but this past week, week 10 in the NFL season, the Dolphins had a bye, so there will not be much, you know, Dolphin talk. I will mention some things, you know, that have occurred throughout this bye week, and now, you know, with our first practice under our belt yesterday of the coming week as we get ready to host the Las Vegas Raiders. There's some great news for the Dolphins, so Jalen Waddle, who suffered multiple injuries to his back in our previous game against Kansas City, which was a lingering issue that had occurred prior in the matchup prior against New England. He is, fortunately for the Dolphins, he's doing a lot better. He was able to fully practice yesterday on Monday, and yeah, it looks like he's all good to go for this upcoming matchup against the Raiders. And some other good Dolphin news, our rookie running back, Devon Achane, he's back. His 21-day window to be activated off of the IR officially started yesterday. And yesterday was his first full practice since injuring himself a while ago. So that'll be a great boost to get him back. And yeah, I mean, add another dynamic playmaker. And in the short time that he's played so far in his young career, we've seen the incredible flashes. So I can't wait to have him back, add him back to our offense. Very exciting. So yeah, now to move on from the Dolphins. So talk about some games that occurred from week 10 of the current NFL season. So I want to start off with the Dallas Cowboys as they pick up a huge 49-17 win over their division rivals, the New York Giants. The Cowboys moved to 6-3 and the Giants fall to 2-8. The Cowboys, you know, it's not just a matter of, oh, they won by so much, they put up so many points, this and that. Just winning, even if they would have won by, you know, by a touchdown or a field goal, just being able to bounce back after a hard-fought loss in the previous week against their other division rivals, the Philadelphia Eagles. I thought, you know, this was an incredible bounce-back win for the Giants. Their rookie undrafted quarterback, DeVito, he makes his first career start. And, yeah, their season, you know, continues to go down, and it sucks to see, you know, they lose Daniel Jones for the remainder of the season with a torn ACL. Now they have an undrafted rookie in. And yeah, it's, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow, definitely. You know, I was very high. For those of you who listened to like our season preview or prediction episode, I forgot what I titled it. Yeah, those of you who listen know that I had the Giants as the number one seed in the NFC. Obviously, there's still a lot of football to be played, so anything is possible. But I did not expect this at all. And unfortunately, I think a big part of their struggles this year has to do with injuries to their offensive line. And aside from injuries, obviously, like I said, Daniel Jones, he's off of the season now. But aside from that, I think the Giants, they're, very, I would say, underwhelming, active off season. I think that's really what's biting them in the butt right now. I think their unwillingness to, go out and get better weapons for the offense. It's really, we're seeing the effects of it right now in the end results, and hopefully it's a wake up call, for that front office to try to, improve the team in the coming off season, because I think it's just been so many years in a row already where they're lacking weapons, and Daniel Jones has done, as much as possible, and now unfortunately he's hurt. So yeah, let's see what happens with the Giants. But to go back with Dallas, I think this is a statement win for Dallas, and yeah, let's see if they keep things going. Like I said, they improved to 6-3, and yeah, they're one of the top teams in their conference now. So let's see how season prolongs. And the speaking of their conference and their another one of their opponents, like I said, from the week prior, the Eagles. So the Eagles were off this week, and they're currently 8-1 in first place in the NFC East, and Dallas, yeah, like I said, 6-3 in second place. Another game I wanted to talk to, CJ Stroud and the Houston Texans, man. They pick up a huge 30-27 win on the road in Cincinnati against arguably one of the hottest teams in the league, in the Bengals. The Bengals started off slow. Then the last couple weeks, we've really seen them turning around and get back to the team that's been to multiple AFC championships, a Super Bowl. We've really seen that team come alive and come back together, right? But hey, these Houston Texans are incredible. First year coach DeMeco Ryans is having a hell of a start to his rookie coaching season. CJ Stroud, arguably at this point, arguably the best rookie quarterback we've seen. It's just incredible what he's been able to do, and he's been doing it from week one of the season, man. CJ Stroud just looks like he belongs. He's calm, he's composed, he has a high IQ, he's accurate, and yeah, man. I mean, he's incredible. In week nine, he made NFL history, most passing yards in a game by a rookie. This week he comes back, he throws for 356 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, and you just see this Houston Texans team continue to grow week in and week out. They started off a little slow, but like what we did see early on, even in their a couple losses there in the beginning, was that they were in every game and they fought to the end. And now we're finally, these last couple weeks seeing the end result of all that fighting coming together, and them, looking like a complete football team more and more as the season progresses. So it's amazing to see a rookie man be this like good so early. So yeah, CJ Stroud is definitely, turning heads, and this whole Texans team, they're looking great, and it's awesome to see. And yeah, they improved to 5-4. The Bengals fought a 5-4 on the year, and it's a tremendously impressive victory by the young Houston Texans. And another game I want to talk about here, another amazing story. The Minnesota Vikings, they pick up a 27-19 win against the New Orleans Saints. Big time win for Minnesota, and their winning streak stays alive. It goes to five games now, and they're the hottest team in the league. Yeah, they win 27-19. Josh Dobbs in his first start. I know, yes, he did come in the previous week and won and finished the game, but he didn't start that game. Now in his first official start as the Vikings quarterback, does another tremendous job. Has a rushing touchdown, a passing touchdown, throws for 268 yards. TJ Hockenson, the Vikings tight end, former Lion, he caught 11 passes for 134 yards and a touchdown. And yeah, Minnesota just keeps things rolling. Josh Dobbs, he keeps th things rolling. He keeps his impressive season alive. And it's not just these last 2 weeks for Minnesota. But what I think why people are noticing now and talking about him and giving him credit is because he's actually in a a good team, a playoff team right now. He wasn't in that in the previous situation. He was with Arizona to begin the first 8 weeks of the season. So happy for Josh Dobbs and the Vikings, and let's see if they keep this thing rolling. Another game I want to talk about here, the San Francisco 49ers coming off of a bye week and following a three-game skid. They were once 5-0. They become 5-3, and like I said, coming off of a bye week, they pick up a tremendous road victory in Jacksonville as they defeat the Jacksonville Jaguars 34-3. San Fran finally gets back to their winning ways. They move to 6-3. The Jaguars, who had I think a 5-game winning streak, or a 4-game, I forgot, I think 5-game. They fought a 6-3 on the year, and just yeah, a tremendous, bounce back performance after a 3-game skid. by the San Francisco 49ers. Brock Purdy had a monster game, throwing three touchdowns and 296 yards. George Kittle, three catches for 116 yards and a touchdown. Fred Warner had an interception, you know, arguably the best linebacker in the league. And yeah, the 49ers get back to their winning ways, and now they just got to sustain this, you know. And I think that the Jaguars are going to be completely fine. We've seen them have these little, like, what do you call it? Blacks in the road, I think. I don't know if that made sense. I think you guys know what I'm saying. We've seen them have it, and it's part of every team's journey. At the end of the day, the way they bounce back is going to show us the type of team they are. And I do think the Jaguars are a legit playoff team, and I think they're going to bounce back perfectly fine. Another game to talk about, a team that's really been turning heads, man. They've really impressed me these last like four or 5 weeks. The Cleveland Browns, as they pick up a huge comeback win, a division win on the road in Baltimore. They beat the Baltimore Ravens 33-31. The Browns improved to 6-3 on the year. Baltimore falls to 7-3 on the year. And yeah, just a tremendous, you know, another tremendous win for the Browns, man. They've had a lot of these, like, you know, marquee wins, and they're really impressing me. They've blown my expectations by far already. I think they've been super impressive, and they just keep getting better and better. It seems like that defense from week one, it's been legit, and now the offense, little by little, is starting to get more legit. And yeah, I mean, man, shout out to the Browns. You know, they're doing great things over there. Another game to talk about here, the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray's season debut. They beat the Atlanta Falcons 25-23. The Cardinals pick up their second win, improving to 2-8 on the year. The Arthur Smith-led Falcons fall to 4-6 on the year. Like I said, Kyler Murray, first game of the season, he throws for 249 yards. And at the end of it, he had a tremendous long run for a first down that set up the Cardinals in field goal range. And eventually, Matt Prater, the legendary kicker, one of the all-time greats, kicks a game winner to give the Cardinals their second win of the year. And it's amazing to see Kyler Murray back and doing his thing already from day one. I think he's an underrated player, and I think he's just been in terrible situations throughout his career. But, hey, good to see him back. And, yeah, the Cardinals pick up a big win against the Falcons. Another game, this is a shootout. The Detroit Lions, one of the best teams in the league, they improved to 7-2 as they defeat the L.A. Chargers 41-38. LA falls to 4-5 on the year. Jared Goff throws for 333 yards and two touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs has two touchdowns. David Montgomery, the other tailback, he was out for a while. He's back. He runs for 116 yards and a touchdown on 12 carries. That's freaking insane. On the other side, Keenan Allen had two touchdowns in this game. He's been balling out. He's always been a great player, but as of late, the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's been back to that prime Keenan Allen, and he's unstoppable at times. But it's crazy, right, to see the Chargers, you know, they're known for losing the close game. And then Detroit, they come out on top, like I said, and it's just incredible to see Detroit, man, just continue to win, continue to, you know, do good things. I'm so happy for Dan Campbell, and yeah, they improved to 7-2 on the year. Another game here, let's see. Yeah, the final game of the week, that'll be the final one I cover on today's show. The Denver Broncos, man, they pick up a huge 24-22 win on the road in Buffalo on Monday Night Football. The Broncos pick up their third straight win. 2 weeks ago, they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and now they go and beat the Buffalo Bills. And yeah, I mean, it's incredible to think where they were at in the beginning of the season, losing to the Dolphins 70-20, a historic defeat. And now, you know, beating Kansas City Chiefs and then beating the Buffalo Bills, arguably the two most consistent teams in the AFC for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And yeah, man, I got to give, you know, a shout out to Sean Payton. Those of you that know me or have heard the podcast, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of him. And, but hey, I got to give credit where credit is due. And I'm happy for him and the Broncos, you know, it seems they're finally turning it around little by little. And yeah, they picked up two significant wins now back to back. And it's crazy, you know, they improved to 4-5, and the Bills, man, they fought a 5-5. And, you know, the minds of the Bills, we kind of saw flashes of it last year. You know, I think it goes really, me, the main issues would be when, you know, something would go wrong last year, and then you would see Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, like, you know, what do you call it, fighting on the sidelines, like pouting and moaning, whatever you want to call it. And then this year, you know, Allen being more wild with the throws, and, you know, having more interceptions. And yeah, it's just looking like things are going down. With that said, look, Like I said a couple minutes ago, they have been, along with the Chiefs, arguably the most consistent team in the AFC the last couple of years. So I gotta give them their respect. Everyone goes through rough patches, and perhaps this is a rough patch for them. But only time will tell. What really is going on with the Bills? But yeah, I mean, once again, shout out, to Denver. And I do want to say Russell Wilson. This was like a Seahawk Russell Wilson type of game. He played with so much grit, man, and just a tremendous, tenacious performance by one of the all-time great quarterbacks in NFL history. And with all that said, that wraps up today's NFL topic or NFL talk on today's podcast. All right, guys. So for the next topic on today's podcast, I'm gonna be bringing on Paul. We're gonna be talking some college football, covering some games from last weekend, some upcoming games for this weekend, some coaching news, and some Heisman talk as well. So yeah, welcome back to the show, bro.
Thanks, man. Always good to be back. Always good to be, live with you. Feels good, man.
Not for sure, man. Definitely, but yeah. So the first thing we could get into here is Michigan beating Penn State. So of course, Coach Harbaugh wasn't there. He's suspended right now. But yeah, man, what were your thoughts on Michigan's win over Penn State?
This game, man, like within the game, outside the game, there's so much to talk about. We only have so much time. But the main thing I want to say is how miserable it was to watch Penn State's offense take the field. I've never watched a team that I'm not a fan of. Like, not that, nothing against Penn State. I'm just not a fan of Penn State, but whatever. Like I actually was like hoping that they would, pull it off. But I have no, skin in the game. I don't have any relation to Penn State, but I could. It was pissing me off watching their offense trot back off the field and the punting team coming back on. I don't even want to see how many punts they actually had. It was so nauseating seeing the plays that they would put together. When your quarterback throws for like under 50% completion percentage, you're doing something wrong. He was not making the best decisions. I'll give him that, Drew Aller, first year starter, but it was so hard to watch. It was nauseatingly hard to watch, Rabbi. It was, I was like, what are they doing? Why don't they just do this? Why don't they do that? They would run it at the worst times and throw it at the worst. They were like allergic to the pass for some reason, especially to the longer pass, which seemed to work sometimes. They would run it and set up like second and short, third and short, and instead of like mixing up the play calls, it was just very vanilla. And Michigan is too good to be like just being very vanilla with. They had a couple plays that were like, okay, like I see you getting into the bag a little bit, but man, it was absolutely miserable. The whole, like I said, the whole time I was not impressed with the play calling. They scored 9 points in the first half, and then they had a touchdown like garbage time late. I really didn't like James Franklin's like point chasing before halftime. It was, instead of making it 14-10 going into halftime, he decides to get cute and go for two. They don't get it. It's 14-9. And then that extra point at the end of the day, like, kind of bites him in the ass because then they have to go for two at the end of the game and they don't get it. And because of that, it's a 9-point game, so it's completely out of reach. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, just a lot of decisions on that coaching staff that really set the team up for failure. And funny enough, they had their whole coaching staff, and like you said, Michigan was missing the guy at the top. They were missing Jim Harbaugh. So overall, to me, it shows me that Penn State, has a great team, but they're not for real this year, like I was hoping they would be. But it seems like Michigan is, because if they could do it without the guy, without their head coach being there, I know there's motivation involved, but they went into Happy Valley, second largest crowd they've ever had in
Wow.
Beaver Stadium ever. And it took the crowd out of it, dude. Without their coach, with a chip on their shoulder, I gotta give props to Michigan. It was a snooze fest, to be honest with you, but it was a hard fought game.
Nah, I get you, man. Now, speaking of, like, go back to James Franklin. I know throughout his career, he's been known, like, to lose a big game, I guess. Like, never really get over that hump of beating,
For
like, the
sure.
best teams in the country, but so obviously, like I think, like His obviously he's on the what do you call it? His seat is hot, I guess you could say. He's on the hot seat, but by any chance, I know it's kind of a random question. Are there any like candidates like that you think that come to mind that you think would like do a good job of coaching Penn State if Franklin were to be like let go?
I don't know, man. It's one of those things that it's weird. Like James Franklin, like they expect him to win big games, but he's never won big games before. You know what I mean? Like he was very solid at Vanderbilt. I saw a thing recently. It was like James Franklin is the only person, the only coach to go 9-3 at Vanderbilt and only 10-2 at Penn State. Like he's just underutilizing the resources they have. Because Penn State is a perennial school for college football. They should be a lot better than they are. I really just I'm trying to think of someone that fits. You know, people always throw out Urban Meyer, always. I think just leave that where it is. He's done coaching for the rest of his life. Should
I
be.
agree. I agree.
I think James Franklin until some disaster happens, this isn't disaster. Until disaster happens, I say keep the guy. I think they are building something. Honestly, it's gonna. I don't know how patient the Penn State fans want to be, but you know they're definitely further into it than a lot of other teams are. They need to get some playmakers in there, man. The offense was sluggish. They have arguably one of the best defenses in the entire country, but they couldn't do it alone. They held Michigan. You know, JJ McCarthy did. You know, had 60 passing yards. They, like you said, they Michigan just ran the ball all over them. And Penn State's the best rushing defense in the country. The thing is, when you have Blake Corum running the ball at you 25 times, and you know what's coming, you know they're just gonna pound you every single time. It's hard. It's hard to just, you know, you're just psychologically, when a team runs 32 straight running plays. To finish a game 32 straight, it's like, dude, what's happening? And then your offense, even you might think, oh, 32 rushes in a game, oh, that's so vanilla. Like, how did they not get stopped? I get it. Michigan, first of all, Michigan's that good. Second of all, they just got into their own head. I think there's a lot of noise outside the game. James Franklin needs to eliminate a lot of that. And it starts with him. He needs to hold himself accountable. And I think he does. But I don't know who would be a good replacement, to be honest. Do you have anyone in mind?
Honestly, I was trying to think of like, let's say coaches from like coaching at other schools, but like obviously, like you said, Penn State is like, you know, one of the elite, I guess, programs in terms of like the history and all the success they've had.
Yeah, a
So
brand.
this might be a random name. Obviously, you're the college football guy here, but the name that came to mind for some reason is Lane Kiffin. What would you think about that? I don't know. That's the only name that really came to my mind, but.
I was thinking about like guys who are not, you know, employed right now, like a Dan Mullen. But there's some guys, Rob, that just belong in the SEC, and they're never gonna
Facts.
leave the SEC because that's where they belong. And Lane Kiffin is one of those guys, and Dan Mullen is also one of those guys.
Got you.
You know.
Got you. Makes sense, man. But yeah, so the transition here, there's something you said, right? About obviously Michigan, you know, pounding the ball against one of the best defenses in the country. It reminds me of, you know, the Miami Hurricanes. Our defense, I would say that in the last four games, has just gotten better and better. Every game they just make stop after stop. They give the offense opportunity after opportunity, but there's only so much you could do. And I have to shout out Trey Benson, a running back of Florida State, because he, if it wasn't for his two incredible touchdowns, I think the Hurricanes would have pulled off the upset over Florida State. Because yeah, Trey Benson, like he was running like Derrick Henry out there. Literally, I was watching that game. I was like, it's incredible. This guy was like shedding tackle after tackle, and like I said, our defense is like it's playing at the highest level it's played in like a very long time. So yeah, I thought that was a perfect transition. So yeah, with that said, yeah, Florida State beat Miami, 27-20, and a nail-biting game. Came down literally to the end of the game. Miami started freshman Emery Williams, his second career start at quarterback. After benching Tyler Van Dyke, unfortunately, Emery Williams, you know, he played like a true like hurricane man, a true warrior. He gave it his all. He put everything on the line. He picked up a huge first down towards the end of that game. And unfortunately, he suffered a injury to his throwing arm, and he and then Tyler Van Dyke had to come in for the final drive. And it's crazy how he literally, like, the game ended, like, Van Dyke's only drive ended with an interception that he threw across his body into like double or triple coverage. And that's exactly why he got benched, because he's been doing this for the last, I don't know how many games. So it's just crazy how literally the reason he got benched for it is how the Hurricanes end up losing. But that said, before I throw it back to Paul, like, I do want to say, as a fan, like, I want to shout out all the players. I think each and every one of them, like, gave it their all, and I couldn't be more proud. Like, as a Hurricane fan, I think they did everything they could. And like, honestly, that's how I've been talking about. Like, they gave it their all. They played with heart, and that's how I want as a fan. I think I've said it here before. Like, even my team wins 5 games, or they say they win 10 games, I want the team that's gonna give it their all, you know. And if that's a 5-win team, that's a 5-win team. But that's what I like to see. And not to get nitpicky, because I haven't been nitpicky at all. But let's say there's one downfall. I would say in the third quarter, the offensive play calling became like super stale, and Shannon Dawson, he just started to call a play that he's like absolutely in love with, that he called like 100 times in a row, I think, against North Carolina State, which is a run up the middle from the shotgun. I think in the third quarter, there was 2 drives that that play calling killed us. And but at the end of the day, like I said, that's not on the players, that's on Shannon Dawson. And yeah, he hasn't been great, but yeah, I mean, I wanted to get all those thoughts in there, but what do you think, man?
Yeah, man. No, I mean, I didn't watch the full game, live, but I did catch the end of it, and I was following. I before this game happened, I told everyone this is a true rivalry game, Rob. Like, you can't, if you don't get up for this game, then what the hell are you doing? What you don't belong in either one, on either one of these teams, in either of these programs, right? The line on this game was FSU -14.5. And people are like, oh man, FSU's gonna cream UM. FSU's gonna wipe the floor with them, take that. I was like, dude, this is a rivalry game. Like, Miami's gonna bring it to Tallahassee. It's gonna be a close game. Trust me. No one believed me. I was telling so many people over here, trust me, it's gonna be a close game. You don't understand. These two teams hate each other so much. It's always close. The team who's away tends to do really good, even, especially when they have a backup quarterback. Like, it was just a recipe for disaster. For Florida State, ironically, like you said, Emery Williams had to step out of the game. Hopefully he's doing fine, but Tyler Van Dyke steps in, has a shot to redeem himself, and lays a complete egg. And the team, and Miami has to go back to Coral Gables with another loss in the in another one in the loss column, unfortunately.
For
But
sure.
yeah.
Yeah, one more thing before we move on to the next topic. I want to, like, make sure, to shout out Mario Cristobal, because I think people have to put into perspective, like, where we're at now compared to a year ago. Like, remember the last time we played Florida State here? Got absolutely
Yeah,
creamed.
for sure.
We lost to Middle Tennessee. We lost, like, think of what we were last year. Look at us now. This is only, like, Mario's second year. His first year with his, like, real, recruits, less of like an inherited roster, like, compared to last year. And I think there's been like so much progress. And I think this game, obviously, you want to come out on top, but regardless of the outcome, I think this game shows that, like, I think we're more ahead than people actually, like, realize. And I hope the fans really realize that, man, because I think what Cristobal has done in this short time is incredible. I had
Yeah.
to make sure to shout him out, because I think I'm mind blown, bro. By the way that, like, we played in that game, and obviously it's a rivalry game, but like I said, last year was such a, like, disaster. I think we lost like 45-3,
Yeah.
and then you come back this year with a true freshman, a quarterback in his second career start, and, like, man, it's incredible.
No, yeah, I love that you mentioned that actually, because if I would have told you last year after the 45-3 loss, if I told you Florida State's going to be the number four team in the country when you guys play them next year, what would you have expected the score to be?
Oh, we're gonna lose, 50-7,
Like
50 nothing.
that Miami versus Clemson game that 1 year that never forget watching that game.
Al Golden's last game,
Thank
the tie,
God.
man, beautiful tie.
That was I'll never forget watching that game at Sports Grill with you.
Yeah, we
But
watched it at Sports Grill.
like, you would have expected me to say, yeah, like Florida State wins by 50 points or something, but the gap closed, it feels like, if anything. You know what I mean?
For
Like
sure.
that's college football, baby. You know what I mean? That's why we love the sport. And that, like you were saying, I think that should give some hope to the fan base and to the boosters and everyone like that's involved, that you guys are not as far behind as you might think. It only takes a couple transfers and a couple bounces of the ball and whatnot to be right back into this. But one thing I really wanted to see what you thought about, Rob, because it's going to be important coming up in the next few weeks to months. What did you think about Jordan Travis?
All right, so to be honest, like I've seen the majority, right, of FSU's games this year. I would say I think we're the only team to, maybe not the only team, I might be wrong, but I think we're the only ones really that got to his head. I know in the fourth quarter he started talking back to James Williams, our safety number 20, which makes sense. James Williams is always talking crap regardless of what's going on, but I loved it, especially in this game because of the intense rivalry. But that said, okay, it's interesting how things work out, right? Because when I see guys like start to talk, and they usually don't talk, I saw him talking back. I'm like, all right, this is either gonna make him or break him. I compare it to like go to the NFL really quick. So the Dolphins, thankfully, we have a specific player who knows how to get into Josh Allen's head, right? That player is Christian Wilkins. One of our best players, like. I would say the pillar of our rebuild. He was the first pick for Chris Greer, whatever. But yeah, Christian Wilkins knows exactly how to get into Josh Allen's head. And what I love is that once Josh Allen like loses his head, everything goes to crap for the Bills. He starts to argue with Stephon Diggs on the sideline. He's pouting. He's moaning. Whatever you want to call it. But unfortunately for the Hurricanes in this one, I think James Williams, talking crap to Jordan Travis. Motivated him, and I would say that Travis he ended the game way better than what he did for the first three quarters. I wasn't, oh my God, like blown away, like, oh man, this guy's like the real deal and he's the Heisman favorite. I wasn't feeling that at all. I obviously I want to believe that a lot of that was due to our coaching and our scheme, and I think our defense did great. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel, man. It was like the first majority of the game I'm like, all right, I mean, he's doing all right, but the way he's hyped up, you would think this guy is like Tim Tebow, like this guy's like a fucking superstar. It's like, I mean, okay, yeah, you could win with him, but don't tell me he's like the best thing you've ever seen either. But with that said, well, I do really respect that after all the crap talking, it motivated him to become a better player. It takes me back to Dwayne Wade, honestly. That's the one guy I always think of. You get Wade pissed off, this guy's gonna go and dunk on you and score like 20 points in a row. So, yeah, it was like a, I guess you'd call it a roller coaster of feelings on him. But yeah, that's how I felt with him, bro, during this game.
No, I'm glad I got your insight on that because I feel like he's one of those guys that his name has kind of cooled down recently, it feels like. There's a lot of other guys that have been getting a lot of buzz, but they're still the number four team in the country and he's leading them. So, he's going to be one of the guys who decides, the fate of a lot of teams this year. You know what I mean? Like their championship hopes and whatnot. So.
Not 100%, man. But yeah, let's move on to the next topic. Talking about your Gators, bro, and their game against LSU.
Do I have to?
Bruh,
Do I have to?
Jaden Daniels, I don't know. He's like, bruh, it was like Madden, right? I don't know. Like Michael Vick and Madden.
I said it a few weeks ago on the show, Rob. I said
Yes.
Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback in the country, not named Caleb Williams. And honestly, at this point,
He's better, I think, maybe.
if I'm an NFL scout, I get why you want to take Caleb Williams. I get it. But the best quarterback in the country right now is Jaden Daniels.
For
And
sure.
I think he made that abundantly clear by making history, being the first quarterback to ever throw for 350 plus yards and rush for 200 plus yards in a game. He had a combined five touchdowns. I mean, it was like, I don't know why the guy doesn't run track. I don't know why he doesn't play baseball. Because he has legs and he has a hell of an arm. He has insane accuracy too. He just drops it into the breadbasket every single time his receiver gets deep. But honestly, like, I could, I could be slurping on Jaden Daniels all day long. Pause. I meant like his game. I'm not talking about him. But seriously, I could be talking about his performance all day long. But this was a dogfight. Don't let the score fool you. It was 38-35 until like a few minutes left in the game, and LSU just got a break, and then they just started like, they got two touchdowns and the game kind of garbage time stuff. But Florida drops to 5-5. It was a dogfight the whole time. Like, these two were trading blows. It came down to a couple questionable calls, a lot of flags. This was a really physical shit talking game. A lot of unnecessary roughnesses, like a lot of unsportsmanlike conducts that swayed drives. Like, there was a drive that Florida had that honestly kept them in the game, towards the beginning. I think it was in the second quarter that LSU gave up, I think, 30 to 35 yards of penalty yards, and it set them up. It set the Gators up for a touchdown, which was a huge deal. Things like that. That's how you know that these two teams are just going at each other's throats for like the whole time. I don't want to sleep on Graham Mertz's performance. He still had over 300 yards passing, with a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. Trevor Etienne had himself a day, 99 yards rushing on 18 carries, three rushing touchdowns.
No.
That's a Louisiana boy too, so I know he that was like
No
a big
way.
game to him. Our other running back, Montrell Johnson, ran for 70 yards. Another Louisiana boy, actually. So,
Damn.
two guys, I'm sure they really wanted to get the win, but yeah, it is what it is. LSU's offense is no joke. But I will say, I was watching this game, Rob, and I was texting you actually. I was saying, every time we send guys, like send a rush to Jaden Daniels and like contain him, he makes plays, don't get me wrong, but he looked a lot more flustered. He was making some bad throws, especially towards the beginning. I'm like, okay, let's keep doing this. Let's stay on him. Let's, if he beats us in the air by beating our secondary, that's how they beat us. But he went off for two rushes. One of them was 85 yards. The other one was 51 or something like that yards, brought touchdowns, just like a track star. Because we send three or four guys, the pocket completely collapses around him, and he takes off, and everyone's in man coverage, or they're all the way in Timbuktu, and he takes off, and no one's gonna stop him, man. He runs like Anthony Richardson almost, but like not as big, not as strong of a runner, but he runs with that same speed, and he has that same ball carrier vision. It's unbelievable. Gators really shot themselves in the foot defensively, but I'll be honest, their offense is looking good. If Austin Armstrong can make the adjustments, the Florida's DC makes those adjustments, I think that they might be able to pull out one of the next two games versus Missouri and versus Florida State, even though they're going to be underdogs in those games too.
Yeah, I hope you guys beat Florida State for sure.
No, I'll take any of either one of those two games in either one. Give me
Not for
one.
sure. For sure. Now, something I like that you mentioned is like when they put pressure on Daniel, he kind of wasn't himself. I think it's crazy to me how that's not like more, what do you call it? Like more people don't talk about that, like whether it's high school, college, or NFL. Like if you put a good pass rush on the quarterback, he's not gonna be the same guy. Like he's gonna be under pressure. He doesn't want to get hit. It's like it's crazy to me, man. Even with like the thousands of coaches that have coached, like it just blows my mind. There's just certain things in football that are like common sense, and I think that's one of them. Like if you put pressure, like it doesn't matter if it's Tom Brady or it's Uncle Rico, Napoleon Dynamite's uncle. Like, bro, like literally, you think of Tom Brady, the one downfall, like. Especially in the last couple of years, right? Oh, just put pressure on him and he's gonna go down. Bro, it's like, I don't know, I don't get it. But, oh, one more thing. Go back to my bad. I have to say this. I couldn't like not say this, but he brought up penalties, right? In the Gator game, I have to mention the no safety in the Miami game.
Oh, yeah.
Complete BS. Like, I'm not, I'm not the type to like, I don't make excuses, but I just think that was like so ridiculous. But whatever. Yeah, any other thoughts, bro? The Gators or LSU?
There was the one specific call that I think just derailed the game, and it was a third down play. That Graham Mertz threw to his receiver. I don't remember exactly who he threw it to, but looked like a clean catch. It touched the ground, but the receiver definitely had possession. He had control of the ball, and they called it a catch. And then they looked at the replay and reviewed it and said, similar to the Miami game, they said, no, it actually wasn't a catch and complete. Gators said they gave up the ball. And then after that is when LSU just started, going crazy. And I was like, that game, that call completely derailed the game. Like, that was like the nail in the coffin. Like, I don't think, if it was going to be a shootout, we needed to keep scoring. And once we stopped scoring there, it was done. And LSU kept scoring, obviously. So, yeah, it was props to them. I think Jaden Daniels, he's my favorite to win the Heisman right now, man. He's a stud.
Got you, man. Now, yeah, really quick, like the play you're talking about that they reversed the catch, that's around the time where I tuned in, and what shocked me the most with like the result of the review was like how is there enough evidence, to overturn it? That was my,
Exactly.
because like, I would understand if it was called incomplete on the field, I would be like, oh, there's not enough evidence. But like, yeah, to me that was a little fishy. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I agree 100% that I couldn't believe that there was enough evidence to overturn. I couldn't believe it.
For sure. But yeah, so speaking of Heisman, like you said, Jaden Daniels, right? He's
Yes,
your
sir.
favorite. Like who, what other guys would you put in that, at the top of the Heisman race, bro?
Man, I looked at the odds right now recently, and surprisingly, Bo Nix was number one. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be number like up there. He does. He's having a monster season with Oregon right now. But after that performance, I don't know how Jaden wasn't first. Michael Penix is obviously still up there. His name has slipped a little bit after some suspect performances by Washington, especially offensively. Yeah, I think guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. should be up there. Malik Nabers, receiver at LSU. I think receivers don't really win the Heisman very much, but I think those guys' names should be up there. Blake Corum shouldn't be slept on either. He's absolute monster. There's a lot of guys I could put up on the podium this year. It's
Got you. By
close.
any chance, do you have any like defensive guys that come to mind that you think should be up there?
No defensive guys win this. The only defensive guy I could see winning this within the next few years is possibly Travis Hunter, only
Got you.
because he plays both sides of the ball. Defensive guys don't win the Heisman.
Got you, bro. Got you. All right. So next topic, you want to get into like some coaching news. So we already talked about Michigan. Obviously, Harbaugh. You're gonna serve a suspension now for the whole cheating, like allegations or whatever you want to call it. And then also Jimbo Fisher was fired from Texas A&M. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on all that, bro?
To get into Jim Harbaugh, because there's two Jims, Jim Harbaugh and Jimbo, but Harbaugh, at least, I don't know what's going to go on with this restraining order or whatever it is that Michigan, pulled. They kind of pulled like a little trick up their sleeve. It didn't get approved in time because of the way that the news dropped on them. I wonder if they're going to be able to, use that now, this time. I'm pretty sure they have, I think they have Maryland this week or some other team like that they don't need to even worry about. But then they have Ohio State. So if they could have a back for Ohio State, I think they'll be just fine. Yeah, they do play Maryland. So they just need to, get through this Maryland game. I know they could do it without them. They've done it before. They just did it this past week. I don't know. It's like the most, it's a unique situation. The Jim Harbaugh situation. I don't even know how the sport is going to handle it this year.
Not for sure, bro. I know I gave you like my thoughts on it like the other day. Obviously, you're more into college football. You know what I mean? You're more on it, but yeah, like I told you, like if it obviously, if it, I think everyone would agree if it's all true and all this cheating went down. I mean, yeah, I'm glad it happened, the suspension. And I remember telling you I was actually shocked that like I'm not shocked. I wasn't shocked by it. I was just like kind of disappointed that nothing had come down like sooner. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't know. It's just because I just go back to New England and Belichick and all those years of them cheating. And like they kept all their, Super Bowls, everything. And I don't know. And then you think of the Houston Astros a couple of years ago. They didn't get stripped of their title, even though they're freaking cheating. So I don't know. All that stuff, like, really, I
See,
can't stand
I get
it.
that, and I get it, and I don't like what the Astros did, and I don't like what the Pats did, but the thing about this is that I know Michigan is not the only team that does this. I don't
Got you.
have physical proof to tell you to show you that. So take me at my word, but they're not the only program that does this. If they were, I'd be upset about it, but they're not, right? So to me, since they're not, I don't have too much of a problem with it. It's like saying, oh, you know, remember when Tennessee was paying players like with the McDonald's bags and all that shit? You know, like, oh, like, should they get in so much trouble for that? Like, yeah, they broke the rules. Maybe other teams aren't using McDonald's bags. Maybe they're using Wendy's or Burger King or something, but they're all doing it one way or the other. Like, this is not anything uncommon, right? I was actually surprised that they struck down on him on Michigan, because it seemed like the investigation hadn't found anything linked to Harbaugh yet. Like anything, so it seemed like they kind of cracked under the pressure of the Big Ten coaches and whatnot.
Got you. No, I get you for sure. Like other programs doing like sneaky stuff. But yeah, I know another thing I brought up to you is like it's like yeah. First of all, I think you know Harbaugh. I mean, he's the head guy there, so I would think he if something's going down, he's like the main one behind it. But also too, like it's crazy how every off season this guy's like flirting. You know, oh, going to with the NFL. You know, go back to the NFL, and then like you see the school now riding so hard for him. Like, oh, he's our coach. We stand up for him. I'm like, where? Like, what am I missing in terms of like? Why are you guys giving him that loyalty? I know you guys are finally good now. You're finally winning again. But like, bro, this guy literally every offseason, every chance he gets, he's like flirting with leaving. And then like, oh, no, don't worry. We'll cover you up. I don't know. It's like a super weird behavior to me. I don't
It's
know.
so hard to win in college football, and it's so hard to be elite in college football. Those same people that are defending him, like their life depends on it, were the same people that wanted to fire him a couple years ago. All that matters is results, and as if they're getting the results they want, if they look like they can win the national championship this year, which they do, they don't care. They're gonna defend them to the end of the earth, promise you. That's what the sport is, you know, for better or for worse, right? It's one of those things, you know. It's a sport that if you lose one game, your championship hopes might be completely done, you know. So if you can, no matter what signs you're stealing or whatever you're doing to get by and go undefeated, especially at a place like Michigan, they're gonna put their neck out for you if you can do things like that, you know. No matter
Got
what
you.
you've done in the past.
No, like that, it makes more sense. You get me? Because, like, man, yeah, it's just been wild.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, man. So, okay, yeah, the other coaching news, like I said before, it was Jimbo Fisher, man, being fired from Texas A&M. So, what are your thoughts on that? Like,
No, I want to hear your thoughts first, real quick.
okay. Yeah, so Jimbo, I was shocked by the firing. I know they haven't, I guess you could call it, like, lived up to the expectations, even though, like, I know he got a bunch of like five stars, but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't really mean much to me. Like honestly, like it's not just, I'm not saying that like, oh, you gotta see how they play you know, in college football. A big thing I was talking to you before we recorded is like what I noticed is that they're super like undisciplined, and that happens a lot. You know, a lot of these guys, like, they're rated highly. They think they're, you know, they know everything, they're the shit, this and that. And they go in there and they do like these stupid ass like penalties. I don't know, like, yeah, I think a big thing there is like, yeah, they're undisciplined, low IQ players, and I guess that burned Jimbo, you know, at the end of the day. But yeah, like I said, yeah, man, it's crazy for me already. You know, the whole five star, four star, like, I don't give a damn, honestly. I don't know why I lost like a love for recruiting, man. I used to be like all in with it, and then at this point, I'm just like, show me the results, and like I want to see these guys. I want to have the eye test, man. You know, I want to see them on the college football field. I don't give a damn what they did in their small like high school against like random people that will never make it anywhere in football, or I don't know, man. It's I think a lot of that is like all BS and politics, like the whole recruiting game, like the whole rankings, and so yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that,
Oh,
bro.
I mean, yeah, to a point, to a certain extent it is, right? Because you can't tell me that, you know, Texas A&M, if let's say their same roster was on Kirby Smart's team,
Oh
that they
yeah.
would be amazing. Or if they weren't, let's say, look at what Oregon State's doing with what they have. Imagine Oregon State had like half of those guys. And they probably have like little to no four or five stars, right?
Got
You
you.
know, so To an extent, it does make a huge difference. I get what you're saying, though. It makes you question it, but it's one of those things, man. Like you said, where are the results? It's asinine the fact that they're paying this guy so much money for literally to be stagnant. The AD, when they asked the AD of Texas A&M how they came to the decision, they said that the program was basically like in neutral, like your car is in neutral. I don't even think that's a good way to describe it, because if you're in neutral in your car will go like with whatever. Like if it's on a slope, it'll go up or down depending where it's at, right? I think they were in limbo. Like I don't think they were ever gonna get out of that situation to get to heaven or to get to hell. Like it was just gonna be a stalemate forever. Like I didn't see any like there was maybe some flashes here and there of good. But then for every one of those, it was another flash bad. It was just the same thing. Nothing's changing, especially his offense. It was frustrating, man. Like, it made me cringe, you know, like, man, these guys just, how can they not do this? How are their pockets this deep and their trophy case is so empty? It's hilarious.
That's a perfect quote, I think, to describe the whole like situation.
It's insane.
And like really quick, do you think like Jimbo, like do you think he'll be done with coaching or he'll be back like next year, year after? What I know that's like recent news, so obviously it's not like.
I don't know. I mean, some of these coaches get into like broadcasting. He doesn't strike me as the type to do that. But dude, he could just collect his money year by year and sit on the
That's true.
couch. I don't think he'll do that for very long, but I think he'll take at least a year off.
Got you. Now,
Let's
who
see
knows, man?
what jobs open up to, you know?
No, for sure. But yeah, man. Any other thoughts on Jimbo? Or...
No, I just want to mention that Mississippi State fired Zach Arcane after 10 games. He was the guy who they replaced with after Mike Leach passed. He was their DC before, and they were 4-6, and they just got rid of him, you know, 10 games only. I kind of feel bad for the guy because that doesn't
Yeah.
seem like a fair evaluation of what he could do as a head coach. But, you know, there's a vacant spot over there at Hale State.
Damn, I didn't even realize that, man. No, thank you for bringing that up. And I agree with you, though. Like, yeah, that sounds like a small, like, sample size, bro, to judge someone, especially after such a, like, tragedy happening in that program, bro, right before the season. So, but I don't
Yeah.
know.
No, yeah. It was you know, so they were in a team that was on a lot of people's radars at this, especially at this point in the season. They're pretty miserable, actually.
Got you, man. But yeah, so to get into that next topic, bro. So you wanna talk a little bit about an upcoming game this week, between Washington and Oregon State?
Yeah, bro, Washington, Oregon State. I mean, it's honestly like one of the last marquee matchups of the Pac-12 this season, you know, regular season play. It's going to be in Corvallis, Ohio. What am I talking about? Oregon, sorry. And like I've told you, Oregon State has been my sleeper, you know, to win the Pac-12 since the beginning of the year. I think they have a nasty team. DJ Uiagalelei is doing great things, and they got Washington, who's been kind of limping to this game. Washington is, you know, undefeated at the, you know, top five team at the top of the Pac-12, but you know they've been struggling against some inferior competition, and they end the season at Oregon State and I think at Wazoo, so they need to get it together because there's not even a guarantee they'll make the Pac-12 championship game if they drop these two games, right? So it's going to be an interesting time.
It's still crazy to me, man, how in that conference all of a sudden, like this year is like, man, so many great teams after like so many years of trash and like misery, and then it's like the final year of that conference, and I don't know, that's pretty crazy to me.
I don't want to say I told you so or anything, but I was expecting it just
You were.
because, due to the fact that they were going to go out. I was like, they're not going to go out without a bang, and they are.
Wild, man.
Oregon State just checked. I don't believe this, but they're actually favored by Vegas by 2 points.
Holy crap, let's
So
wow.
it wouldn't be
Wow.
too much of an upset in some people's eyes, it seems like.
Man, you're right. I know like I've seen like peaks of like the last couple of games of Washington, and yeah, it seems like they've kind of like sneaked by at the end.
Yeah, they struggled. Honestly, their last couple of games have not been their best.
Not for sure. All right, man. So you want to get into the pick'ems of the week?
Let's do it.
All right, you wanna? All right, so you could give the first pick. So the first game here is Louisville against Miami.
I have a feeling I know where each of us is going to go in this game. Give me Louisville. If Tyler Van Dyke is going to get the start for Miami right there, I can't pick them to win. Louisville won a really close one against Virginia this past week at home. Let's see Miami's response, but I think Louisville pulls it out.
Got you, man. Yeah, I gotta go with Miami, but I think ultimately the equalizer, whatever you want to call it, is gonna, yeah, it's gonna depend on what type of Tyler Van Dyke, the Van Dyke of old. If he shows up, I think Miami will be fine. But if the current one continues to come out on that field, it's gonna be I don't know, like it's not gonna be the result like Miami fans want, but man. After what we just did against Florida State, it's like crazy. Like I was telling you before we recorded, like if Emery Williams was in there, I'd be like, oh, well, I think we're fine, Honestly, like I believe in him already. But yeah, I gotta go with Miami, man. So the next game, we have SMU and Memphis, 2-8-2 teams here. I'm gonna go with SMU, bro. How about you?
Give me the home team. Give me Memphis. This one feels like a coin flip, though.
Gotcha, man. Next up, we have Appalachian State Mountaineers against James Madison Dukes. I had to go with Appalachian State, down in Boone, North Carolina. I know they just came off of a big win. I can't remember who they played, but that's a program that, I've followed like over the years, and in recent time, I've been able to visit their stadium. I love the city they're in, and yeah, I'm gonna ride with them. How about you,
Bro,
man?
I knew you were gonna pick them. I knew you have a soft spot for them. Give
For
me
sure.
the Dukes. Give me James Madison. I'm pretty sure this is this the game that yeah, game day is gonna be at this game, surprisingly enough.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, James Madison is one of the hottest teams in the country that is not bowl eligible because it's their first year in the FBS. So they're undefeated, but they can't even make a bowl. They're trying to petition that. I think I say they're playing with a huge chip on their shoulder for that reason. They're gonna get another dub.
Got you, man. Yeah, I forgot to mention the record. Yeah, Appalachian State is 6-4, and like you said, James Madison, they're undefeated, 10-0. Okay, the following game we have number 18 Utah at 7-3, heading to Arizona, take on the number 21 Wildcats at 7-3 as well. So who do you have in this game?
You just said the rankings. Those are the AP rankings. Don't be surprised if Arizona's ranking is gonna be higher than Utah.
That's true.
When
That's
this
true.
game actually happens, but I got Zona. They're the best three loss team in the country right now. Real hot. Well, look out for them. They're making a statement like season right now. After they've just been trashed for so many years, they're picking it up. Utah seems like they're struggling a little bit too right now. Give me the hot team, the Cats.
I'm with you, man. And I'm doing it. I got to go with Isaiah Taylor, oldest son of Jason Taylor. And next up, we have Illinois at 5-5, heading to Iowa, number 22 in the AP rankings right now. And they're 8-2 right now. I'm going to go here with, I don't know, I'm just kind of random. I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going to pick Illinois here. How about you?
I don't see Illinois being able to score 15 points. And if you want to be Iowa, you need to score points because they won't score, but they'll hold you. The over-under in this game is probably going to be like 30. Iowa won 22-0 last week. It was a complete snooze fest. Give me the Hawkeyes again. Really low scoring.
Gotcha, man. All right, the following game, it's the ACC matchup. We have number 24 North Carolina at 8-2, heading to Clemson, who is 6-4. So who do you have in this ACC game, bro?
Surprisingly, despite records, Clemson's still favored in this game, and I think they should be because they play amazing at home. They only have one home loss, and it was the FSU overtime thriller. Give me Clemson at home again.
I'm with you. I'm with Clemson. I also, to add on to your point, I think Clemson right now they have actually been playing a lot better as of recent. I think North Carolina hasn't been as consistent, so yeah, I'm gonna go with Clemson there too. Next up, we have UNLV at 8-2 facing off against Air Force at 8-2 as well. I'm gonna go with the UNLV Rebels in this one, bro. How about you?
Yeah, me too, actually. Air Force has been on a little bit of a skid. I think it's going to continue.
Gotcha, man. Next up, we have number 25 Kansas State against number 16 Kansas, and both at 7-3. What do you think about this one?
This is another one that's weird. Kansas State is ranked 25. They're on the road. Kansas is home, and they're ranked 16, and Kansas State is a favorite. I think there's a reason for that. I think that Kansas State in their bigger games this year have stepped up. Even if they haven't won them all, they've definitely brought their A game. And I think their A game is better than Kansas' A game. So I got the Wildcats.
Got you, bro. I'm gonna go with Kansas in this one, the Jayhawks. I think they're gonna continue their winning ways and pick up another, like, big win this season. Oh yeah, next up, a game we covered already on today's show. We have number 5 Washington heading to number 12 Oregon State. And this one, I'm gonna go with Oregon State. I think they're gonna pick up the win, and I think Washington's, blunders the last couple weeks are gonna finally bite them. Yeah, I think Oregon gonna hand Washington their first loss, man. What do you think?
This is like picking against my baby right now, Rob. It's literally like picking against my baby. I can't. It's hard. I really do think Oregon State has a chance, and it's going to be a close game, but I think something about tells me that Washington is just going to pick up the pieces this week. They're going to get up. They're going to realize that this is like that everything is in front of them, right? The offense will get it together. It's going to be a battle, even though these two guys are never going to get on the field at the same time. DJ Uiagalelei and Michael Penix Jr. are going to put on a show, but give me the Huskies.
Got you, bro. All right, so for our final matchup for this week's pick'em on ESPN, we have number 7 Texas at 9-1 heading to Iowa State at 6-4. So who do you have, bro, for this final matchup?
I got Texas, but they've been looking real suspect, man. Don't be surprised if it's a one-score game.
Got you. All right, I don't know. I'm gonna go Iowa State. I haven't really watched them this year, but I'm just like feeling that for some reason. I'm just gonna go with the upset there. Yeah, for Iowa State. But yeah, man, any other thoughts you have, man? Anything you want to say about college football, bro?
Yeah, I just want to tell people tune into the Florida Missouri game. I think it's going to be worth watching, not just because I'm a Gator fan, but Missouri is one of the hottest teams in SEC, and Florida is fighting for a bowl game. So I think that's must watch TV, especially if you care about SEC football at all. I think it's going to be a good one.
Got you, man. But yeah, no, it was another fun time recording, bro. Thanks for coming on again, and hopefully you could do it again soon, bro.
Sure. I don't know.
Right, guys. For the next topic on today's sports episode, as always, we'll be covering some baseball. Of course, free agency started a week ago, but with that said, I don't have much to report on the free agency end. The only thing I do have to mention here is regarding the Atlanta Braves. I guess this is like so far the most significant move that's occurred. But yeah, Atlanta has decided to exercise their $20 million option on Charlie Morton, so the multi-time All-Star, and yeah, a hell of a starting pitcher is gonna be back in the ATL with the Atlanta Braves. Like I said, aside from that, in free agency, like I said, nothing's occurred. I mean, yeah, it's really the significant move, and it's a guy staying with his team, so that kind of tells you, it hasn't really been moves yet, and it's kind of shocking. But I guess as time goes on in the winter meetings, they're in the first week of December, maybe things begin to heat up by then. I'm not really sure right now. It's kind of hard to track as to when things are gonna finally, heat up, perhaps in the winter meetings, or yeah, or perhaps, I mean, well, only time will tell, but yeah, there's not really much to talk about with free agency. Some other news to talk about. Some awards were announced yesterday on Monday. Gunnar Henderson of the Baltimore Orioles was named the American League Rookie of the Year, and Corbin Carroll of the Arizona Diamondbacks was named the National League Rookie of the Year. And I think a lot of people would agree with me that these are two of the best rookies that we've seen in baseball in a very long time. And they didn't just do it in the regular season. Corbin Carroll, he did it as well in the playoffs, and he was one of the main reasons as to why Arizona ended up winning the National League. And then when you think of Gunnar Henderson, the majority of the bats for the Baltimore Orioles in their lone playoff series against the Rangers were asleep and they never woke up. But then it's crazy to think that the rookie, probably the youngest guy there, one of the youngest, he was arguably their most consistent hitter in that playoff series against Texas. It's just like wild to think about, but I mean, it is what it is, you know. Aside from that, some other things that mentioned, the Yankees made a staff hire recently. They hired James Rousen to be their hitting coach. As a Marlins fan who had Rousen here for a couple years, I don't think that's the greatest move for the Yankees, but it makes sense in terms of how things have been going for them in recent memory. I mean, it hasn't been a lot of winning, a lot of those, it hasn't been winning a lot of, it hasn't been a lot of success. There's just been a lot of spending money, bad fits, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, so this move doesn't shock me, but yeah, Rousen. Like I said, he spent several years with the Marlins. I know before that he was with the Twins, and let's see what happens. He's a new Yankees hitting coach. Another thing to talk about, so the Houston Astros, after their manager Dusty Baker retired after a 30-plus year managing career, they finally announced who will be stepping up as their new manager, and that person is Joe Espada. Joe Espada has been an assistant coach in Major League Baseball for a very long time with the Houston Astros, with the Marlins. He was here as well, and I think others, I'm not sure what other teams right now, but I know definitely with Miami and with Houston, and good for him to get this, tremendous opportunity in general, just to get the chance to be a manager. But you also think of the opportunity at hand in terms of the roster he's inheriting. He has a chance, to be one of the rare managers in history to, become a World Series champion in his first year as a manager. So good for Joe Espada, and we'll see what happens there, with the Houston Astros. Other than that, I don't think there's much else for me to talk about. Like I said, the main thing here we're waiting on is like free agency. Like I said, it's really just, Charlie Morton. Atlanta decided to like use their team option on him and keep him for next year for $20 million. So other than that, there's not really anything that stands out or anything in general. Yeah, like I'm not just saying like, oh, no all-stars, no big name player, like no one has been signed, So I mean, I don't think there's much else for me to talk about with baseball. So yeah, I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed my MLB talk on today's episode of the Flame Entertainment and Sports. Yeah. All right, guys. So as always, for the final episode on today's sports episode, we'll be talking about the NBA. As the season is getting deeper and deeper, there's much more to talk about. I want to start off with my Miami Heat, as we are currently on a 5-game winning streak. We currently sit at 6-4 in the year, and we're doing great things, very encouraging things at such an early point in the season, and especially from our young core. And I want to talk first about Jaime Jaquez Jr., our first round pick, the rookie out of UCLA. He's just been from day one, literally from his first game in the NBA. He's just like shown that he belongs, not just on the NBA court, but he belongs in the Heat culture. Like he fits in perfectly. He does everything. Like he's not just like a one-dimensional player. He's incredible on the defensive end. And in 10 games into his career, he's guarded like literally superstar players. He's guarding LeBron. He's guarding like some of the best players in the league in 10 games into his career, and he's held his own against them. And then on the offensive end, he's shown his versatility, whether it's driving in, whether it's shooting threes, whether also like getting offensive rebounds and putting up putbacks. Like Jaime Jaquez, man, he's an incredibly special rookie, and I'm so happy to have him here in Miami. And talk about the Heat a little more. So like I said, we're 6-4, so we're 10 games into the season. And with that said, here's a crazy stat for you. Only two guys on the roster have played in all 10 games due to injury. So that is Jaime Jaquez Jr., who I was just talking about, and along with Duncan Robinson. And speaking of Robinson, and our most recent win came on Sunday night against the San Antonio Spurs, a huge fourth quarter comeback. Duncan led the way. He had a tremendous outing, and he's been tremendous for us this year. And I'm so like happy for him. I root for Duncan a lot, and people always give him crap. But this year is the first time that we're seeing like more of a versatile side of his offensive game, as he's not just shooting threes anymore. He's also, driving in, he's kicking it out, he's putting up, floaters, layups, whatever you want to call it. and he's becoming more of a versatile player, and that goes to like the hard work he puts in and him trying to get better in all aspects, not just in the shooting department. So it's amazing to see Duncan, thriving. Aside from those two guys who have played every game, Bam Adebayo, he's on an absolute tear. He had a 20-point, 20-rebound game a couple games ago. He's having like these monster 20-point, 17-rebound game, like double-digit points, double-digit rebounds, double-digit assists. It's just incredible. We're seeing little by little his elevation into like superstardom. So yeah, it's great to see. Jimmy Butler, he's played in 8 games so far this year. Kevin Love, he missed a while, but now he's been able to play the last 2 games, and he's been an incredible spark for us as well. And obviously, I could go on and on here, but I'm not gonna just talk about the Heat, talking about the NBA in general. Couple of stats for you here. So the team leader in points right now. The team leader in points, rebounds, and blocks is Bam Adebayo, as he's averaging 23 points per game, 10 rebounds, and a block per game. And then in the assist category, Kyle Lowry is averaging 5 assists. And in the steals, not a surprise, Jimmy Butler is averaging an assist per game. Now to talk about the NBA more, as a whole, not just the Heat. As currently stands, I'm going to read some of the standings here in the NBA. So I would say that, yeah, the team with the best record right now in the league is the Philadelphia 76ers. They're 8-1 after losing their first game of the season. They're on an 8-game winning streak. Followed by them, we have the Boston Celtics, who are 8-2, the Denver Nuggets, who are 8-2, and the Dallas Mavericks, who are 8-2. Some other hot teams in the league, I'm looking at winning streaks. Like I said, the Heat, they have a 5-game winning streak, so they have the second best winning streak right now behind Philly in the East, who's at 8. And the third best winning streak right now in the East is the Celtics at 3. Then the Western Conference, the hottest teams right now are the Houston Rockets and the Minnesota Timberwolves, two young teams. The Timberwolves currently sit at 7-2, and the Rockets currently sit at 6-3 on the year. Following them, another hot team is the Sacramento Kings. They're 5-4, and they have a 3-game winning streak. And then the Lakers have a 2-game winning streak, and they're sitting at 500 right now at a record of 5-5 on the year. And speaking to go back to the Sixers, the best record in the league. It's been great for them trading away James Harden. They're playing better. And also Tyrese Maxey, he's getting more of an opportunity. And a couple of nights ago, he actually had a 50-point game. So great to see that for sure. One of the best young players in the league. Now to talk about some stats around the league. Points per game right now, Luka Doncic is number one, averaging 32.5 points per game. Then rebounds, we have Nikola Jokic averaging 13.7 rebounds per game. Assist category, Tyrese Haliburton averaging 12.2 assists per game. In the block department, Anthony Davis, he's averaging 3 blocks per game. In the steals department, Paul George is averaging 2.3 steals per game. Field goal percentage, Mark Williams shooting 72.6% from the field. 3 pointers made, not a shot. The greatest shooter in NBA history, Stephen Curry, has 62 threes. And that is 19 more threes than the number two spot here. Luka Doncic at 43, just wild to think about. And then 3-point percentage, Dylan Brooks right now is at 53.3%. And then, okay, I mean, this is kind of random. I never talk fantasy here. Fantasy points per game, if you guys are interested or play. Nikola Jokic is the fantasy points per game leader on NBA.com at 60.7. Fantasy points per game. And yeah, well, that's it. I think that pretty much wraps up the NBA topic on today's show. I talked some Heat, and then went over the standings in the East and the West. Mentioned some stat leaders around the basketball globe. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the final topic on today's sports edition of the Flame Entertainment and Sports. Go Heat. 'All right, thank you guys so much for tuning in to today's sports edition of the Flame Entertainment and Sports. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. You want to give me your thoughts, you know where to reach me, on Instagram at the flame underscore yes, or at Rob Gao, Robcao. You could also reach out to me via email at tfesrob@gmail.com. I'd appreciate if you guys could follow us on whatever podcast platform you're currently listening to us on, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or any other podcast platform. Make sure to, yeah, tell your friends, tell your families, tell your coworkers, tell your teammates about the podcast. I really appreciate if you guys can help me spread the word about it. And yeah, till next time, everyone, take care.